Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, episode number 38, I'm sitting down to have a conversation with Maureen Pena. Maureen is a former recruiter for Harvard, but now she owns her own business as a senior talent consultant, and she's helped some of the top organizations hire the right people. She gives some great tips for standing out in the marketplace. So, listen up. Before we jump into this conversation with Maureen Pena, I just want to thank all of you that support this podcast, for all of you who stopped by iTunes and left that 5-star review and some comments on how this podcast has made a difference in your life. I really appreciate it. And I want to invite you to keep sharing, keep sharing, keep sharing. Now, this interview with Maureen Pena is really, really, really rich. I met Maureen at a conference that I was speaking at several weeks ago, and we started up a conversation. I invited her to be on the podcast to talk about her work as a recruiter, some of the mistakes young people, young professionals make in looking for a job, and some of the things that we can leverage to stand out in the marketplace. So take some notes as you listen to this conversation with Maureen. I have the chance to sit down with Maureen Pena, who is a senior talent acquisition consultant for development organizations, and she's based out of Boston. She has extensive experience in recruiting, executive search, staff management, and business development, and she loves to create resources and networking strategies resulting in candidate development and placement. That sounds like a mouthful, and I'm sure Maureen is going to help us unpack it. Maureen, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Excited for us to chat. Now, we met at a case conference a few weeks ago, and it was just a short conversation in the hallway that kind of led to this podcast interview. Tell us a little bit about your professional background and how you ended up at that particular conference that we were at.
Okay. I actually have been working as a consultant now, on my own for about 3 years now, and always looking for different ways to network and build candidate pipelines for organizations. And most recently, I've been with Boston University, going on about 7 months for them. We didn't intend it to last for 7 months, but what I do is help attract candidates to their more senior level roles. And I've done that for a number of large nonprofits over the last few years. Prior to that, I was the lead recruiter for alumni affairs and development at Harvard. And I had this epiphany that when you work within a large organization, sometimes you don't get to do all the things you'd love to do. And I love to connect people. And I had no time in my role there, as much as I loved the staff and I loved my team. I just knew that I had an idea that would really work for organizations that don't have the resource to do this type of pipeline or candidate development. So that's a little bit about, my recent work. Does that help?
Yeah, it helps. And so, so you say you're with Boston University now?
Yep. Currently, I'm doing some work for Boston University and Lesley University, which is a smaller college in Cambridge. But it's caught on, my business model. And it caught on because of exactly what I said. When you look at an organization like any of the large universities or the large hospitals, they're really, really strapped for resources. But they want to be able to reach the best candidates they can possibly do. So I am all proactive recruiting versus reactive, which we all know is, posting and looking at resumes that come into your computer. And this is above and beyond referrals. I'm constantly building my database and building my relationships so that I know when somebody's ready to make a move and if they'd be interested in a certain organization.
Okay, you touched on something there that I think the younger leaders who are listening to this podcast may want to dial in on a little bit. You talked about proactive recruiting versus reactive recruiting in organizations. Can you unpack that just a little bit more and some of the major differences between the two?
Yeah, you know, it's not rocket science, but my life, Pierre, has always been about connecting people to better jobs or helping them into better opportunities. You know, I started in the nonprofit sector myself, and then I went into the for-profit world, the agency recruiting world. And I've also done outplacement counseling with organizations, but always with the eye on how can I help you end up in a better situation for yourself? And if I had to dial it down, I am all, you know, when people say, what do you do? What are you? And I said, you know, when a 10-year-old asked me what I do, I'm a recruiter. I help people get jobs, whether it's deans of development or CEOs of a nanotech company. It's almost the same process, but you have to be curious and you have to love it. And I'm lucky that I have that. I have those two qualities. I love what I do, and I'm curious, and I love to meet people.
Now you can look up Maureen on LinkedIn under Maureen Pena. Mm-hmm. And when you look at your experience on LinkedIn, you see, as you noted before, that you worked for Harvard. Now some people would say, you know, Harvard, this is Ivy League, this is dream job stuff. Like, why would you leave a scenario like that to go and work for yourself?
Well, I think I gave you the honest answer. Even a Harvard, and people love it, and some people stay forever. But it is a really, you know, it runs very lean, and it also, you know, it's a lot of work, and there's lots of bureaucracy, not just in Harvard, but any large organization. So the things that you want to get done, you can't always get done. And I guess I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. And I think if you look at my LinkedIn profile, you'll see, wow, you know, I've probably been in at least 10 different organizations over the span of my career. And now I work for myself. And I think I had to have all those experience to get where I am. You know what I mean? But Harvard, it's interesting. People say, oh my God, Harvard, why don't you have more candidates for these positions? Where is it? You know, it's a tough, tough place, like all organizations, in that they're very, very particular about qualities of the applicants, you know, background, work history. And that's a big one for any organization. Oh, why did this person move around? So if you have credible reasons and you deliver it well, you can meet those expectations and end up in a place like Harvard. But I think you have to do your homework anywhere you go. You know, you have to really understand what's important to that organization, what appeals to them. You know, what are they working on? What do they need? Can you answer a need? And I answered a need when I went there. I mean, I was a recruiter, yes, my whole life. But it just so happened that my mother was in fundraising and development. So I was the first recruiter that they interviewed that understood what fundraising and development was and what professional associations these people belong to. And, you know, I had already done a little bit of homework and networking in that area. So I sounded like I really knew what I was talking about. And I did, you know, because I grew up with it. But they were like, wow, this makes sense, right? Well, let's hire Maureen to do the recruiting for our campaign. And they had, over a 2-year period, they had 60 ads to staff because of their campaign. But the reality, they had over 120 job openings in any given year because people get promoted or they leave. You know what I'm saying? They, it's a great, great ground for professional development. You know, you walk into fundraising at Harvard and you find a staff assistant that is now a dean of development who's been there for 30 years. You know what I'm saying? So lots of people are, there's always room for growth, but there it's also get some experience and move out to somewhere else. So it was so labor intensive, that role. I said, this is, you know, I never had any chance to do what I did with you, Pierre, is meeting people, networking, getting out there, finding out, you know, who's out there who would be, you know, interested in, you know, fundraising careers. And now I'm doing that.
So beyond just the fundraising and development space, for any professional working for a company or working for themselves, how important would you say is that networking capacity, that getting actually getting out there and meeting people inside of your industry, outside of your industry? How important is that element? Because it seems like in some ways we're losing it a little bit.
That's, you know, when I sit down with anybody, you know, and I'm sure people come to you, Pierre, as well, friends and family, you know, oh, I'm having such a hard time finding a job, you know, as a school nurse or whatever. Like, you have to go to, you know, push yourself to do something, you know, once every 2 weeks or once a week, to go to some networking event or professional association, because you will always walk away with more intelligence or more information. You're always going to meet somebody that's going to help you move forward in what, you know, what you want in your professional life or your career. Honestly, I think you know it and I know it. Nothing, you're never lost. You never lose out, you know, when you attend things like this. You never do. It's always worth it. So that's the advice I give everybody in career. You know, who are you linked into? Who do you know that's connected to where you want to be, and see if they'll talk to you.
I'm having a conversation today with Maureen Pena, who is a senior talent acquisition consultant, and she just dropped just some free advice for everyone out there who's looking for a job. Get in those places and those spaces where you can meet people, where you can network, where you can engage, and where you can see what's out there. So talk to us a little bit about once a candidate, once you begin to identify candidates, and what are some of the things that maybe, you know, the resume looks good, references are solid, but when these organizations, these schools are sitting down in these interviews, face-to-face conversations, what are some things that come through for a university or an organization or nonprofit to say, I don't think this person is going to be a good fit?
Having no idea or no link to what the organization does, I think would rule somebody out right away. I think if you can parallel experience, even from a, you know, say you're in a nonprofit or you're looking at a higher ed, but you're coming from, I don't know, insurance or banking, to be able to talk about a mission or a goal within that organization and how it's parallel to what needs to be done in the organization that you're going to go to. It has to be convincing and it has to be credible. People in the nonprofit world love people that are mission driven and have done even a microcosm of what needs to be done on a larger scale. Like if somebody, you know, volunteers on weekends and has raised some money for a school organization and has, you know, led volunteers. I mean, I've talked to so many, especially green young professionals, that their experience, whether it's college or in a work situation while they were in college, is so similar to what needs to be done in that, you know, that fundraising job at, you know, Boston University. So having done something similar in relative and really doing it with a passion, as opposed to, oh, you know, my uncle told me I should apply here, you know? I hope that's helpful. I'm thinking about young professionals, and it's all about how committed and how interested you are. And I work with a lot of people. I keep telling them, go back to what you really, really care about and then tell that story. It's hard for a lot of people. It's hard for them to make that connection. It's not that easy, but if you increase your chances, like networking and talking to a lot of people, and then you build your knowledge, and you all of a sudden you know what you're talking about, and you sound like you know what you're talking about, and you're more convincing in order to get that next job.
What's the factor that social media plays in all this, in the spaces and places that you've recruited? Like, is it a factor in your circles? Are we looking at people's social media? Are we checking out what they're doing? What impact does that have, if any?
It has impact. There are some organizations that are more that scrutinize more than I do, and more than the organizations that I work with. I'd say larger organizations really don't, you know, drill down to your Twitter account and your, because you just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. But you better not. Somebody might do it. So you better be careful on what you're putting on Twitter or what you're putting on Facebook. I have not run into that situation in any of the organizations that I work with where, oh my God, look what this person put on their Facebook account. I haven't had that. But we're all trained to talk to people about, don't put anything on any social media that you wouldn't want your mom to see, right? It's kind of basic, but it's true. I think it's generational too. I still see the senior leaders in organizations aren't as savvy on social media as, you know, more middle level and junior. They're much more savvy about that. LinkedIn is premier to me. You know, I live on it and have built a pretty significant network there. I love it because it's just professional. And it has nothing to do with personal lives. And I like to keep that separate. So I'm not recruiting on Facebook and I'm not doing that.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Now you talked about this dichotomy between maybe junior leaders and more seasoned or more senior leaders. If I know that I'm in an organization and I want to climb up in this particular organization, I don't want to necessarily go anywhere else. What are some of the advice that you would give? Like, what are some of the things that I can begin to be doing as I want to progress in the organization?
You have to do your job well, first of all. Okay. The basics.
Right.
All right. Make sure you're doing that well. But I got some advice from another colleague at another institution. And it's so true. Try and look at areas that you know need attention or problems that need to be fixed and put together an idea or a plan about how you could do that. And perhaps go to your supervisor, you know, and once again, it's one of those above and beyond things. That's what makes people stand out in any organization. Like, you don't just do your job, but you always are looking for how to make things better in the organization or make things run more smoothly. So those are the people that stand out, and it's worth trying, you know, try it. For the most part, I'd say it'll probably work out, you know, whatever you're going to try to do, improve a process or, extend some hours or whatever you, when you work in an organization, you say, oh my God, this isn't working. We need to figure something else out. Mm-hmm. Try and be a part of that, figure that out. And, you know, approach your supervisor and say, you know, I have some ideas. What do you think about this? Maybe they'll help you, or maybe they'll just give you that autonomy. And if they do and you're successful, what do you think happens?
You move.
Mm-hmm. You do.
That's really good stuff. Just really for my leaders out there, look for those spaces where, I mean, it's common in organizations, all of us point fingers at a problem or an issue, but how many of us are willing to put something together to be a solution to that problem?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know what? It makes your work rewarding. You're not doing the same thing over and over again, right? It's a project. And it's more interesting, and you'll get deeper, and it may take you down a new path in a whole nother area of the organization that you never dreamed, you know?
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Mm-hmm. Now I want to shift gears. We just have a few minutes left. I want to shift gears and talk about the entrepreneurship side of what you do. So working for a major organization, a major nonprofit, I'm sure there is some oversight, maybe some checks and balances, some boxes you have to check off, right? But how do you lead yourself as an entrepreneur? Mm. What are the systems that you have in place to hold you accountable to you or whoever you set up to be accountable to make sure that you're actually getting stuff done?
Oh my God. A calendar.
Okay.
When you are an entrepreneur, you're just inspired to do the work that you love to do, but you also have contracts, you know, you also, have proposals, you also put things out there and you say you're going to deliver, and you better deliver what you say you're going to deliver. And I've learned, because I'm a more mature worker out there, you have to put in the time in order to deliver. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't fall from the sky. You know, you have to put in the time and the work, and you have to, manage your calendar appropriately. And also, like I said at the beginning of the conversation, you have to get out there and enjoy that. I don't know, that Myers-Briggs thing. Remember Myers-Briggs? Do you know about that? The personality test.
I do.
What are you? What are you? I used to be. Go ahead. What are you?
Well, you go first and then I'll say.
You remember? Okay. So early in my career, I was INFP. I was more of an introvert. And they say you'll never change, but I did change. And I think I changed because of my profession. So now I'm an ENFP.
I think I was an ENTJ. Does that sound right?
Okay. Yeah.
It's been some years ago.
Yeah, it's great stuff. But, anything like that will help you, improve upon what you love to do and be aware of things that you're not great at. I think, was it Drucker? Peter Drucker is another author who wrote about management. And it's like, do the things you're really good at and don't worry about the stuff you're really terrible at. You're never going to be good at them.
It's so true.
So anyways, that's my advice. I hope I answered the question.
Yeah. Just a couple more points to touch on. So you've worked in an industry for a number of years and you've worked in different places. You launched your own business. Your business is about 3 years old.
Right.
Three years old though. What's the advice for the entrepreneur? I know you talked about this before, but what's the advice for the entrepreneur that says, or the leader that says, man, I have an incredible idea. I got an incredible idea for a service or an initiative or something that I can do in my area of passion. But man, I just wish that somebody would pick up the phone or send me an email or send me a LinkedIn message and ask me about my amazing idea.
And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You have to take a chance. You did this. You're doing it right now, right? You had an idea. You saw a need. And you went for it. Just go for it on a small scale. People say, oh, I wish I could do what you do. I said, you can do what I do. You know, it's not that, it's take a chance, take a risk, do something on a small, do a little small project, see if and see if your idea works. And if it works, then you can say to the next person, I just did this project for such and it was so effective. And then it just builds. But you have to take a chance. You have to take a chance. That's all there is to it.
Man, I think that's a great place for us to end our conversation. Mm-hmm. Folks, if you're listening to this, take a chance. Mm-hmm. Take a chance.
Yeah.
Been talking today with Maureen Pena, a senior talent acquisition consultant. Just loves putting the right people in the right places. Maureen, how can we reach out to you or follow up on what you're doing? Where are the places? Social media, email, wherever. How can we stay in touch?
Okay, so my email is my business email. So that's penyanetwork@gmail.com. And so that comes directly to me. So if anybody's interested in having an informational or networking conversation, I'm happy to do it. Love to do it. Okay. So that would be the best. And the other is you can connect with me on LinkedIn. That would be even, that's as helpful. Because then I can know more about you when we're talking. Okay.
Awesome. I'll put that pinyanetwork@gmail.com and then I'll put the link to Maureen's LinkedIn profile in the show notes for this podcast. And we hope you got a lot out of this conversation today. It was really rich. Maureen, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
You're welcome, Pierre. It was really a pleasure and I hope we can our paths cross again.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Maureen Pena of the Pena Network. She has some valuable insights for those of us who are looking to stand out in the marketplace, those of us who are on a job search, and not even just that, those of us who are entrepreneurs. We owned our own business. We're starting to develop our own brand. One of the things that really stood out to me in the conversation with Maureen is how she talked about you can't just sit behind your computer. You can't just sit at your desk. You can't just sit in front of social media with your idea. You can't just sit around waiting for someone to call you, sitting on all the things that you've cultivated, the things that you worked out, sitting on all your brainstorms and hoping and wishing and praying that someone will call you. This thing called life, this thing called success in business and entrepreneurship, hey, even this thing called leadership requires, it demands, it necessitates that you get out there and have face-to-face conversations in real time. It requires that you get out there, that you shake hands, that you meet people, that you network, that you introduce yourself to someone else. And that's why it's important for us to practice, sharing our story, practicing that elevator speech, practicing getting out there and having conversations. Even for people who start initiatives, you start organizations, you're looking for fundraising. Maureen primarily works in the fundraising space now, helping development organizations find senior executives, senior development professionals. And that requires face-to-face conversations. If you're trying to build a buzz, if you're trying to build some rapport for your organization, you got to get out and meet people. I love emails. I love social media. I love things like LinkedIn and making contacts and having those digital conversations. But nothing quite beats having a face-to-face conversation in real time. So I want to challenge you. If you're looking for a job, go out and meet people. Go to some networking events. Talk to some people at the places where you work out, the gyms that you're a member of, the church that you visit. Strike up conversations in line at Panera or Chipotle. You just never know who's out there, and you never know. You could be having a conversation in line with your next boss, with your next employee, with your next client, with the next person that's going to invest in your business. You never know, but you got to have some conversations with people, and I hope you do it. And I also want to encourage you to have conversations about this podcast. Let people know how this podcast is making a difference in your life and helping you to grow as a better leader. Leave me a review on iTunes. A 5-star review helps me take this message of what it means to be an effective leader around the world. Hey, that's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. And until next time, take care and God bless.